I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and it's good to be talking with you here on The Takeaway. Now, we have been discussing language and what it means and how it shapes the way we tell stories. The words we use to name ourselves are foundational to our language and foundational for shaping our identities and communicating who we are to the world. Afro-Latinidad, Latino, Latinx, Hispanic, all are just some part of the language used to identify people whose ethnic and familial heritage originates in a large portion of the world, including Spain, Mexico, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. But what do these terms mean for those who use them? Joining me now is Michelle Reed Vasquez, an associate professor in the Department of Africana Studies at the University of Pittsburgh, where her specializations are in the African diaspora in the Caribbean and the Atlantic world, and Afro-Latinx history in the U.S. She's also the director of the Afro-Latinidad Studies Initiative. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also joining us is Ed Morales, journalist and author of Latinx, the New Force in American Politics and Culture. He's also a lecturer at the Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race at Columbia University. Ed, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, Ed, I'm going to start with you here in a conversation that actually got really intense yesterday among the Takeaway team and staff. What is up with the word Latinx, and where did it come from?
Well, Latinx, in its popular use, really dates back to the middle of last decade. But there's evidence of X being used in identifying Latino identity as far back as the 70s, when there was an article published in Chicano Riqueño Journal that alluded to the use of X in Mexican identity. Also, there was use of X in among Chicana feminists in the 90s. But really, my students really started talking about it around 2014. And after years of students and the Pew Hispanic Resource Center saying that young people no longer wanted to identify with the broad label, some students started coming to me with this Latinx, which they said included LGBTQ people. I found it interesting because it alluded to the spectrum of identities among non-binary people that non-binary people have and the ones that Latinos have in their own view of their racial identity.
Michelle, what's your first reaction to the word Latinx and kind of your take on it?
Sure. So I will have to admit I had to sit with it a minute because I teach Latino and I speak Spanish and so all of that. But as I read, as I said, let me just do a deep dive into the scholarship and how it's being presented. So of course, I ran into the piece about the gender neutral alternative to Latino and Latina to address non-binary individuals. But also, I kept thinking about the X in terms of African American history as well. And so a lot of the things lined up, and I said, yeah, the X also refers to resistance to invisibility, resistance to exclusion. I said, okay, I can get with that. Let's bring on the equis. Let's bring on the X.
So why not bring on the equis rather than the X? I'll run through some of what happened, which undoubtedly has happened in your classrooms, but kind of happened in our, pitch space, which was on the one hand, some language about, hey, to understand Latino or Latina as gendered in the way we think of male and female is just not to understand the language, right? When something has the O or the A, that doesn't necessarily mean it is gendered male and female. It's just the form of the nouns in a way that just isn't really how English words work. And so therefore there is no need for the X. And then the other sort of conversation was, well, no, the X is fine, but we shouldn't use it as an X. We should in fact continue to make the word sound Spanish. And X is not part of sort of that linguistic discourse.
The use of the X not being something that's native to Spanish is, I think, part of the point of using X is to define a different sensibility or awareness that Latin American descended people have living in the United States. And the use of Spanglish is something that marks the community. And actually in Latin America, there's a lot of dropping of English in sentences. So the strict adherence to language is sort of part of the normativity that, you know, language structures impose on people, and using the X is a kind of translanguaging act that is subversive to that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that that X does speak to this, the location in the U.S. It does speak to resistance to these kind of traditional forms with the endings of the O and the ah, and also just of identities. So I think it's a useful appropriation of this X to mean all these different things that are resistant to kind of traditional understandings, but also to create space for these different identities that have not necessarily fit in more traditional arenas.
So I love both of these. I'm going to push one more on this, and then we'll move to some other pieces as well. Ed, I'm wondering, you know, when I'm of a particular generation, and so I think about that X in part also as standing in for Malcolm X, right? And the ways in which sort of the X baseball cap that, you know, was part of, you know, a kind of 90s youth street fashion that also reflected an understanding of resistance to, you know, to the American state and to the racism of the American state. And I'm wondering if that X gets deployed here in a similar way.
Well, certainly I would like it to be, you know, I've written pieces in which I've alluded to Malcolm X using that to symbolize the erasure of his ancestors and African culture from notions of what mainstream American culture are, you know. But, you know, there's a problem in the Latino community where doesn't want to recognize enough Africanness, and there's huge movements for advocacy of Afro-Latinidad. You know, I think that it's very fitting to allude to Malcolm X and his use of the letter X.
Let's dig into that other way of thinking about X as also almost like a map symbol, right? It's a reflection of intersectionality. So, Michelle, Afro-Latinidad, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what does that mean? And how, sort of play for us out what that intersection of Blackness and Latin identity, how that plays out.
Let me start with the kind of a simple overview that, you know, there's certainly slavery throughout the Americas. 95% of enslaved Africans were brought to the Caribbean and Latin America, 5% to the U.S. So that's why there are so many people of African descent in Latin America and the Caribbean. And so when I talk about and teach about Afro-Latinidad, it refers to these multi-layered cultural identities that are shared and as well as unique. People of African descent with heritage in Spanish and Portuguese speaking countries who reside all over the world. So you can have Afro-Latinidad that connects to Portuguese speaking Africa, to Latin America and to the U.S. diaspora communities. But it's really about celebrating, embracing, understanding the history of those people of African descent and acknowledging kind of the issues and processes that they continue to have to encounter. And particularly, I look at this hemisphere.
And what do you find in this hemisphere? How does that particular intersection give rise to particular cultural and historic formations, Michelle?
Sure. I mean, we see everything from cultural practices. So Santeria through Cuba and Candomblé coming out of Brazil. Lots of African linguistic retentions throughout the hemisphere. Processes like contemporary migration. Issues of policing, civil rights more broadly, gender violence. There are a whole host of kind of transnational issues that connect people of African descent, particularly those who connect to Afro-Latin America and have communities in the U.S. and then connecting to more communities of African descent. Because remember, we have African immigrants and Afro-Caribbean immigrants and African-American populations throughout the community. So they really, those who are in the U.S. really add to this, to the nuances of what Blackness means in the U.S. In the U.S. context.
Part of what happens when we start to understand this intersection with Blackness is that right along with it comes forms of domination and racism.
Yeah, absolutely. the racism in Latin America in general has been disguised by the creation of ideologies that are known as mestizaje ideologies, which, you know, try to make sense of the mixed race hierarchy that Spanish colonialism imposed, and try to make it turn into a positive for Latin American identity. But what that did in many countries was eliminating people from counting themselves in the census and bringing claims to the courts. You know, there's not enough precedent for discrimination against people in Latin America, black people in Latin America. And so that's one of the ways of denying it, because there hasn't been many court cases that are brought. So this is something that's Latinx community is trying to work through more closely at this moment, because there are so many young scholars and leaders who are advocating for recognition of Afro-Latinidad. And, you know, Afro-Latinidad also alludes to the alliances and experiences that Latinx people have shared with African Americans, you know, going all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century, and most clearly manifested in things like the creation of hip hop, and, you know, how New Yorican Poets Cafe, for instance, was closely associated with freestyle rappers in the 90s.
You can't just stop on freestyle rappers in the 90s and then stop. You got to give us the rest of that. You got to give us Ramon. Come on now.
I felt I was talking too much.
No, not at all. I was like, let's do this.
there's so much crossover between Latinx community and African-American community. In fact, you know, many Black Latinos found their way to both their African and Hispanic identities or Latino identities by being in the United States and sort of looking around them and seeing how they fit into the spectrum.
Michelle, I'm interested in this idea that at intersection, right, there is there are questions of conflict and of domination, but I think also about how in the U.S. Whiteness is itself a sort of an identity to be achieved, right? So, and whiteness carries with it, of course, as we know, all the wages and the goodies and the privileges associated with it. And so for communities, there may be, like, to the extent that there is a capacity to achieve whiteness, and not everyone is allowed to, and I'm using that language purposely, right, to achieve whiteness, I'm wondering if there is also tension about the notion that the Afro-Latinidad will keep Latinx communities sort of tied to Blackness and to all of the disprivileges of Blackness, rather than allowing sort of an achievement of Latin American identity, of Hispanic identity, of Chicano identity to constitute a form of whiteness?
That's a really great question. I think in some way, I think for some people, definitely, because again, as Ed pointed out, it's Blackness is not so much recognized or valued in Latin America. And so when those cultural pieces show up in the US, and I see it in my classroom, I have students, Dominican students, for example, who know that they are of African descent. Like they like, I cannot deny it, but I talk to my parents and they refuse to use the word. They refuse to say that they're Black. And so so they're often kind of concerned about, well, where does this leave me? What does this say about my community? I'm not trying to, and they're saying explicitly, I'm not trying to aspire to whiteness. I'm trying to embrace my multiracial, multicultural background. But if I look at the larger Latinx community, there is this, and it's partly the way that the U.S. has constructed what Latinx, Latino means, what it's supposed to look like. And in our in that context, Latino is closer to white in many instances, and certainly does not include Blackness. And so I think that's, so part of that, those pre-existing tensions, both out of the country, and then bring those to the paradigms that we have here in the U.S., really do continue to create the tensions, but also I think that there's a lot of work being done by community organizers and scholars trying to figure out ways to say that there can be multiple perspectives within the same community. That doesn't have to be all or nothing or one way to look at it, but there are multiple again, there are multiple names, categories that we use, labels that we use. And so there should be multiple perspectives looking at these communities as well.
And I'm wondering how that insight that Michelle's offering us there also ties in with your book work, right? With this notion of being a new force in American politics, and yet also both this diversity of opinion and not just of opinion, but I mean, one of the ways that you can cast in your lot with the black and brown and dispossessed people versus casting your lot in with folks who may be better resourced and are certainly much more likely to be white has to do with casting a ballot for the Democratic or Republican Party. And obviously, Latinx voters are much more heterogeneous in their voting than African Americans typically are. And I'm wondering, like, how that power in American politics also gets racialized.
Well, yeah, clearly our politics over the last 30 or 40 years has been, well, forever, you know, in the United States, strongly racialized. And in my book, I argue that Latin American descended people, and I'm using that phrase, you know, to avoid saying Latinx all the time, because I don't necessarily enforce it as, you know, something that I think people should use. I'm super interested by the term. But Latin American descended people in the U.S. really, I think, have more of a chance of, you know, gaining political power as a cohesive interest group by identifying with racial difference. When Latinx people abandon, you know, the notion of racial difference, they're just really sort of acting like many white voters in the United States, and are now sort of becoming part of the larger constituency. I think that African American voter blocs have a lot of power because they are unambiguous about identifying with the racial difference. And I think that you can see that African Americans have consistently voted against Republicans by 80 to 90%, you know, over the last several election cycles. So I think that when Latinx people or people of Latin American descent abandon identification with racial difference, they abandon a chance at political power as a voting bloc.
Michelle, thoughts around the notion of voting as a bloc for power or reflecting these meaningful differences within community?
I mean, I think that's in part, I mean, obviously, as Ed pointed out, these are particularly useful and important, the way that we deploy them here in the U.S. But also, we have to keep in mind that Latinx is not a racial monolith. I think that's why in some ways it's hard to pin it down necessarily as a block in some instances, or certainly, I think, especially as we move into further into the 21st century. But I think we will continue. Right now, we don't have many other kind of models for looking at them. And so looking at this population. And so I think that it will become even more, there will be more kind of complexity and trying to kind of gauge how this group is voting, because again, it is different in different parts of the country, and I think in part, large part, because people are finding coalition and alliances with African American voting blocs. So I think that we're going to see some shifts in that in the coming elections.
I so appreciate from both of you the sense of standing just back enough, like both the attachment to, but also standing back just enough to have an interest, right? To watch it, to wonder about it, and to have a certain curiosity rather than solely a prescription. I think it's a helpful way for all of us to be trying to think about the development of language and identity and our self-namings, that we are both very attached to them, but also can be genuinely curious about the ways that the things that we call ourselves and how we understand our connections to others grows and changes over time. Michelle Reed Vasquez is an associate professor in the Department of Africana Studies at the University of Pittsburgh. And Ed Morales is a journalist and author of Latinx, The New Force in American Politics and Culture. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.